It's the TV Talk Machine. I'm Jason Snell, and across the internet from me, your host, Chief TV Critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hello.
Hey, Jason.
I didn't give you the game show host intro this time. I thought I would mix it up.
I did like how somebody thought that that would have been your fourth or fifth career, not a second career.
Could be number two. I might be that good at it.
You might be, actually.
We may never know. Game show announcers. There are not that many jobs for game show announcer, unfortunately.
Not really, yeah. Not a ton of them.
So, I got some good news. We talked about it. We answered a question last week about a question in the sense of like, probably. It was not the most definitive answering, but it was, is it certain that Better Call Saul is coming back? And many people wrote in to tell us that it got renewed officially. So we're all good now.
Excellent, because I haven't caught up yet. That's one of the ones that I'm sort of writing about that very thing. So we can do. Oh, but also yesterday it was announced that there will be a 2-hour movie to wrap up the mysteries involved in Sense8.
In Sense8, yes, that was a
big news.
There was a whole bunch of outcry, and Netflix said that they heard the outcry, but they were limited in what they could do. It sounds like so very devoted fan base, very connected producer in Joe Straczynski, who's on Twitter answering fans' questions, and they were like getting really mad at him because he was trying to explain like the facts of how the industry works. Can we get somebody else to pick this up? And he's like, no, Netflix owns the show. the actors are no longer on contract. It sounds like there were some complex issues where Netflix was actually had not yet decided whether they were going to pick it up or not. But basically, they went past the option period for the actors, at which point the actors are loose. And I think what I saw streaming by is that maybe when they went and attempted to get some of the actors to come back on board, some of them didn't. And that may have actually been part of the decision-making process. I don't know. But the end result of all of this is that they're going to do a 2-hour movie, basically, to cap off the Sense8 story and give it a final, presumably final ending. You never know, but probably. And that's a lot of logistics, and plus Netflix putting up the money to make it work. But so that's quite a turnaround. That doesn't always happen.
It doesn't always happen. You're right. It's a no.
And all the fans are like, you said that there was no chance to Straczynski. You said there was no chance that there would be a third season. He said, yeah, just notice that I never said there wasn't a chance for a wrap-up movie, but not another season. And so it'll be interesting to see how they put it together, but at least it's something, right? Give a little closure to the fans.
Yeah. I think it's great. I think it's hilarious that people start accusing the people involved in it of like...
the people who make the show.
Right, blaming
like,
them.
Who are probably the most... Like, even more than the fans, like, it was how much of their lives to make this show. But I was thinking about this, too, because I was thinking about how, you know, you get these shows that are serialized and they've got an ongoing storyline and then they don't have a conclusion, and how people will say, oh, you don't even want to watch that because it doesn't have an ending. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I wonder if it is a smart use of Netflix's money to, since they've invested 2 seasons in this thing, to get it to have an ending just so over time people can find it and discover it or have it recommended to them and watch it. Like, I would imagine Sense8 is way more valuable having an ending than not having an ending, right?
Absolutely. Like, yeah.
So just if you're Netflix, and, you know, again, different economics and all that. But if you're Netflix, isn't that a better asset to keep on your service if it can be watched from start to finish and have an end? I mean, I wouldn't recommend it if it just like, oh, well, this is a really good show, but then it has a cliffhanger and it's over. Like, great. Why would I watch that?
Right.
But here
really
now, you can watch it beginning to end.
Yeah, it's really smart. And it's not. And they must have figured that out. But now I'm interested in like, whether there would have been a third if the actors signed on. It's a really interesting kind of insider's deal.
Yeah.
But
And again, yeah, interesting in the sense of like how the sausage gets made, right? Mm-hmm. Which is you could have a show that maybe was on the brink of whether they could pick it up or not. And it depended on a lot of times those things come down to like the fee, the network pays the studio to produce it, or it goes to what rate the actors are paid. And if they have to make concessions in their contract that they signed, or they have to sign a new contract. And sometimes you have that. I was reading how, after Adam West died, mm-hmm. I was reading how NBC was going to pick up Batman after ABC canceled it after 3 seasons. And they were like talking to the studio, and then it turned out they had torn down the sets.
Oh no.
And NBC said, forget it. Like yeah. they were willing to put in the money to order some more episodes, but they weren't going to pay to rebuild the sets. And since they had torn down the Batcave, basically, they walked away. And it's just like, what a funny thing. Like there was a network willing to buy more episodes of that show, but for, you know, obscure behind the scenes reasons of managing their studio space and the cost of letting the set stand versus folding them or trashing them, that season of Batman never got made. It's just like sometimes it's not about the will of somebody to broadcast it or people to write it or actors to be in it. Sometimes it's just some really obscure business reason that is an impediment to making it happen. So, yeah, not wild. The art of television, it's the commerce of it, but still kind of interesting.
Yeah, and the commerce part remains interesting and obviously probably even more important in this day with so many competing partners.
Yeah, but, and I think that's why fans don't understand it, right? Mm-hmm. It's because from a fan's perspective, they're just judging the content. Hey, this is a good show. Why isn't it coming back? And the answer is not because it's not good enough, and oftentimes it's not even because not enough people watched it. It's like, well, it's not owned by the network, so it's, you know, there are other shows that are priority, or is there a demographic issue, or is there a cost issue, or I mean, like, there's so many things that are totally beyond the scope of you as a viewer just saying, hey, this was a good show. Why isn't it coming back?
Right. And sometimes the thing that happens is we get lost in, you know, on this podcast and people who listen to it and people who sort of read what I do, though, I those people are on the upper end of understanding the business. And so it's easy when you're surrounded by them all the time, like-minded people, to sort of forget that the rest of the world, they don't all understand how the sausage gets made. Nor do some of them don't even have like a, I mean, I notice a difference even when I go on Facebook and I see people's questions on there or comments. Some of them don't even have like a rudimentary understanding of like how things happen. It's like magic still to them. Which is kind of fascinating because you always see like when a season ends, people are like, well, when does the next one start? And then yeah. I'm like, well, let's see here. Probably not for a year. Yeah. What? And they're stunned. And I'm like, why? It's 2017. Why are you stunned? They don't happen. There's like magic. These guys don't work, you know, there's not like 36 episodes of this and people need a break. And I'm kind of stunned. So when you're not around that group of people all the time, I guess you could sense why someone would be outraged at the show's creator for like, why aren't you giving me this thing that you love?
Right.
Want more of it. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's a pure feeling of like, I love this thing. Why are you telling me that it can't come back?
Yeah, why are you, the person who created it, not giving it to me anymore?
And the answer is like, you know, they own it and they don't want it and we can't take it away. And it's and actors and contracts and it's like stuff you don't even want to know about. You don't want to hear about it. It's not, you know, it's not the kind of answer you want because it's just this piece of art that you liked and you loved and you wanted to come back. And unfortunately, it's not just art, but commerce. And they too have to, interact or, you know. I don't know. I credit Straczynski for like trying to not sugarcoat it for his fans, but they got really angry with him because he wouldn't tell them what they wanted to hear.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's such a basic thing. It's like people have, there's something, somebody, some company has an outlay of cash to make you do it. And at some point, the people who actually are writing things, they don't have the cash to own it outright. You can't, like, there's not, I mean, That show is so expensive to shoot. I mean, I would have to say that's got to be one of the most expensive shows that ever made. And it's certainly because Netflix is not shy about throwing money around, but boy, that is big. But you were right. Circling back, that's right. I mean, to close it out is so key because it's like people would have just Googled it and found out some kind of Reddit thread or something where it's like, yeah, hey, it's a great series. I loved it, but it ends on a cliffhanger and it's really frustrating. And then no one starts it, right? So they had to wrap it up.
Yeah, no, it turns an asset that would have been kind of iffy, I think, into much more solid because it's got a beginning and an end. Even if the end is a 2-hour capper, at least there's, you know, closure because Netflix owns it all. I mean, it's going to be a unit. You can just start Sense8 and go all the way through to the end, and that's, you know, that makes it a more sellable package to any potential viewer.
And that's still, and this is like a modern issue, I think.
I think this is why Netflix in the future, as it's now canceling shows, it canceled another show too.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like 4, I guess, now. So boy, the knives are out at Netflix.
Yeah, it's.
But I guess this teaches Netflix maybe even a lesson that is, if you're going to have a show go out, have a either give them a season and say, end it. Or have something in your back pocket where you can do a little order or a movie or something and wrap it if it's something that really's got ongoing storylines, because that's probably going to maintain your asset of your show better than if it just kind of falls off a cliff and is never seen again.
Right. And this is a digital streaming era issue, which is really new to everybody because, you know, if your favorite network show went off the air, which most of them did, a lot mm-hmm. of time there was no resolution. Most of the modern day cable series had some kind of resolution because cable was, they were better curators about, they knew it was a smaller and devoted audience, and there was and they actually really took care of their series creators and said, okay, we want this to end correctly. You need to wrap it up next year and you have this. So streamers, and that's a thing, but before in the history of television, it's just shows ended without resolution all the time. It was just frustrating. But no, they never lived around. You had to find them on DVDs but now when you're in this streamable world and you have, you know, Netflix and Amazon and Hulu and upcoming Apple, as we discussed, you actually have to, if you're going to keep your content around and have it alive, so to speak, and be a part of your selling package. Look at us. We have this vast library of series. You can't have a bunch of duds in there. You got to have things that finish. Otherwise people will say, oh, don't start that. There's no conclusion. So that's kind of a modern problem.
Girl Boss, by the way, is the latest axing.
Yes. Girl Boss went down.
It was one season and out. Phew, gone.
That's really interesting. I wonder if they, part of me, when I heard about that, a show I did not watch, but I wonder if Netflix was hesitant early on to like have a slew of cancellations because it wanted to maintain the illusion that everybody created around it, that it was, you know, that it just had all this money and didn't have to cancel shows. And then, you know, finally when something really, two shows that were enormously expensive, like The Get Down and Sense8, once that kind of pushed them to have to do it, I mean, that was a big financial hit. Then they were just like, oh, well, we've done it now. But, you know, the gloss is off now. We are also an entity that cancels shows. So, boom, bye. Now they might start coming more frequently. I wonder if there was a part of that involved them wanting to sort of like hold on to that illusion that they were above it all.
Yeah, now the dam has burst a little bit.
It's burst, but, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it could be. And I wonder with something like gone after one season like Girl Boss, if there was and Get Down, essentially, was one season split in two, that, you know, sometimes shows just don't work, right? Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that's, you know, something that Netflix now is feeling a little freer to do, of saying, yeah, it's not what we thought it would be. Not only maybe the numbers aren't working, but also maybe they just feel like creatively it's not working and there's no point in spending more money on it. Like, it's not going to get any better. It's not worth fixing. We're just going to cut our losses and go try something new. And yeah, that's part of growing up, right? They can spend that money on new stuff that might be a bigger hit rather than just sort of sinking more money into a show that they already know what it's going to be and don't love it.
Yeah, trying to read their tea leaves, I love, is fun, but it's funny, but it's very, very difficult.
Well, we'll see what they do next, what they cancel next.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Hey, you reviewed a really interesting show. You reviewed the prequel series, Prime Suspect Tennyson. So a prequel to Prime Suspect, which, of course, was Dame Helen Mirren as Jane Tennyson. And now here, I think she's a dame.
She is,
and now,
yes.
And now we get a prequel with mm-hmm. young Jane Tennyson.
Yes, Stephanie Martini.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so how is it?
Well, that this is one of those ones where no shame in that. It just happens. It's, you know, I put it off to the end, and you know, it was like one of the ones we were just going to go online only, and I watched it, and I kept watching. You know, I watched as many episodes as I could, and it was I liked it, and I liked it in the structure of in the context of, and I don't read anybody else's reviews before they go live, but I read it in the I did my review, or wrote it, I should say, in the context of I will like this series to play out. You know, I had heard rumblings that even on Twitter that like, oh, it's, you know, it's not very good because it's like the people wanted the badass Jane Tennyson, the grizzled, the hardened woman at the end. And I thought, well, if this, you have to have this to tell a complete story. You have to have this first season on PBS and ITV where you take the completely 22-year-old naive version of Jane Tennyson and you put her into this sexist 1973 police force. And yeah, she's going to be getting tea for the bosses. She's going to have sexual discrimination. She's going to have, you know, you're going to be able to see her emerging skill set as a detective, but she's just, it's a roadblock. This is a long story. So in the long haul, because Lydia LaPlante has written a series of books, she's basically taken back her character. You know, she wrote the character and the show as a TV series, but she was a novelist. And then after, I think, the third season, she left Prime Suspect and wrote a bunch of other books, but now she's circled back recently and she started the Jane Tennyson character in a series of books. And so she's written Tennyson. This series is based on, it's a book called Tennyson. And then she has two more and one after that. And one of them's already out. One comes out in 6 months. And then the fourth one comes out in 2017. So there was this path to get basically to a more grizzled person. And so my review was based on, if you take this path and you tell the story and you go slowly and you say, yes, she can't be a grizzled veteran at 22. She's got to stumble. Then it was really good. And I thought, yeah. And so I posted it on Friday. It aired on Sunday. And I had done research on the books and things like that. But like a day before my review came out, ITV decided they weren't going to go forward. So basically, that was a pointless review of mine. A little frustrating. And the reason it wasn't coming up in any of my searches is that the British version is called
Prime Suspect 1973.
Yes. So if you Google Tennyson, Prime Suspect Tennyson, you get the PBS stuff. And then if you Google Tennyson and Lydia LaPlante, you get all of her books and the characters and interviews about her prior to the show airing in England and all the stuff. And I read through all that during my research. What you didn't get was Prime Suspect 1973 a day before my review came out, not being picked up because it was linked to that headline.
So I'm going to be like those people we talked about before and say, I don't really understand how before the show airs in the US that ITV, and apparently this is the weird part, is apparently it got good reviews and good ratings in the UK.
And it did get good reviews. And I don't know how they did it here. So I actually never went to look.
ITV announced it wouldn't be renewed. Their press release said nothing but positive things about the show and said, and basically said, we can't renew everything. It's like, what happened? Like, that makes me wonder if mm-hmm. something else is going on, right? This is the reason it's not coming back is because of some unstated thing that it's not about it creatively. It's not about its ratings. It's not about any of that. So what is it? Is it, you know, a problem with the cast? Is it a who knows what it is? It's very strange that they didn't they didn't even do it. And this happened actually with BBC America. That was the rumor all along, was that BBC America was holding the Doctor Who spinoff Class to run with Doctor Who, even though it ran in the fall in the UK. And the rumor was, like, BBC had already decided not to bring it back, and was, at least they didn't announce it until it aired in the US, because, like, what if it was a hit in the US? Wouldn't you want to bring it back then?
But yeah, I know, like, right?
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird.
Well, I will put my 2 cents in on what I think happened, not knowing anything, putting that out there. I mean,
right.
You can,
that's what podcasts are for.
That's
what things out there, not knowing anything.
This is what we do. It's just, it could be wrong, but I would say there's probably strong indications that if there was a cause, this one might be it. Lydia LaPlante is Linda. I keep saying Lydia. Linda LaPlante is known for being a little bit difficult. She did leave her own show, there's a lot of stuff in the British press about how she can be kind of a diva. She did leave the show, and she did famously say that she would have never turned Jane Tennyson into an alcoholic. Which is an interesting take, because this is the woman who created the character for sure. But at the same time, that is, to me, that's a Hall of Fame series. And one of the reasons it got there was Helen Mirren. But that character really did have to be ground down, and she found solace in alcohol, because she's a very flawed character, which is what makes her so great. She makes very bad decisions, even when she knows better. And the alcohol part always seemed perfectly organic to me and natural and likely. But anyway, so Linda LaPlante has been vocal about that. Now she,
I have found more information.
Oh.
You nailed it, because she made a Facebook post.
Oh, she did.
And said, I was incredibly sad to have had to walk away from the series. During production, it became apparent to me ITV's vision would not be an accurate adaptation of my novel, and the characters that had been cast were far from how I had written them in the book. My decision to leave the production was one of the most difficult and painful of all my years of writing. So it sounds like this is a, like, we're going to walk away, and I wonder if they agreed to walk away, or if she withheld or needed to give approval for her other books to be adapted.
Yeah.
And so maybe she pulled the plug. Wow.
Yeah. But then if you think about it, that's a little bit crazy for her to do, because it did get good reviews over there, like you said. I really liked it. I thought if it continued along this arc, it would be great. Maybe she just doesn't see it that way. But again, she didn't actually see the Jane Tennyson character who she created going in the direction where she ended, where she got that character at the end got its most lauded moments, when she was gone. So here you have a situation of a person who's a novelist, this is not uncommon, but disagreeing with how the television show is made, even if everybody else thinks the television show is actually really good.
Right.
So I think that, because I knew when I wrote my review that she had walked away from the show, she was supposed to be on the staff and wasn't. And so that to me is like, once you said that, what would it be? I was like, well, it's probably her. She's already walked away. And it's weird though, because you'd think for somebody who has all these books, who's going to make these books into movies now? No one's going to actually start a series now, because there already is, the first book's already made into a series. It's really rare to do that again. So I don't know. Maybe she's just like, says it's not worth it. A TV show that doesn't have my vision is not worth it, I guess.
Interesting. I guess she doesn't need the money.
Right?
Which I gotta admire that. I would also say that, like, a TV show and a movie, or a TV show and a book, are different things, and of course they're going to be different. But then again, she made TV, and so she has opinions about it, because she actually did make this on TV. And I don't know. Prime suspect Tennyson is there on PBS for people to watch and enjoy those three episodes, three 90-minute episodes.
Well, yeah. I mean, and now the point is, like, why would you? Why would you care? Because she's not going to grow into the Jane Tennyson we know. She's going to end as a 22-year-old rookie all these problems. So again, it's like Sense8. It circles back again.
Oh well. Boy. All right, I've got a few letters here. Should we do some letters?
Yes, we should. I would just say the one thing that I did that will come out next week when I'm hopefully going to take a vacation. I'm doing a review for next week and a couple of critics' notebooks. And by the way, one of the critics' notebooks will be about like a Q&A. So if any TVTM people want to send questions to me for that, for a printed response, definitely just send it to my at Bastard Machine Twitter thing and I can take care of that. But the other critics' notebook that's already written, I wrote it because I, quote unquote, I was going to stay home this week and do a staycation. But what I found was all I was doing was watching TV, trying to catch up. And then I started wanting to write things. And then I was like, you know what? This is not a good week to go off. This is a great week to catch up. Dan wrote his own critics' notebook about that there's this very tiny little bit of a lull in the TV world right now, and people can take advantage of it and catch up on stuff. And I read that and I laughed because I would have added 20 shows to that, and he probably would have added 20 more. And so, you know, just the point is there's no catching up. But as I read that from home, I thought, well, here we are in this weird situation. And you and I have talked about this a little bit, Jason, but I use this critic's notebook to elaborate on it, which is, I think we're in the world now where as critics are and everybody's grasping how the landscape has changed in the last 2 years, probably for the ones who are coming to it late to try to figure out their own issues are us, our critics and media outlets. And as I've proposed to THR is that I'm not as interested in doing so many reviews because we start them all and we never end them. I want to focus on some of the endings rather than the beginnings. And I also think that, and I'd be interesting to have your take as somebody who just watches a lot of TV or tries to watch it, especially you and your wife try to get together and watch things. But I think that the print and / online industry is changing because there's so much content. This is all tied together of things that we talk about all the time on this podcast. Everything's tied together. But now we really are, as I said, we're post-season. We're post having identity to a network or a cable channel. It's just all one thing now. It's just a blob of content. And so, you know, we're post-review. We're definitely post-finale because no one can really talk about finales anymore because not a lot of everybody has seen them. And so, you know, I ask people, hey, did you read my, and I was talking to some friends about this, did you read my thing about The Leftovers and The Americans? Nope, because they haven't finished it yet. Some of them hadn't even started it, you know, and then I was, and this has been anecdotal and ongoing, but, you know, I myself stopped reading the postmortem in THR about Fargo because I wasn't done yet. And I finally read it, you know, Dan did a great job of that. And, you know, it's just, there are people who haven't even started Fargo yet. So technically that like postmortem, me. Yeah, like you. So that postmortem for you is pointless. I mean, it'll be there. You can search it out. But like the endings, we're post-finale. This is a post-finale world. We're actually in a post-review world is what I'm trying to say. Is that, yes, reviews matter a little bit at the beginning now. Because we have to do it. You do it before the deadline of a show coming out, obviously. But people are coming to shows like Grand Central Station on hundreds of different tracks coming in at odd times. And I really think there's value in constant, like having an evergreen sense of reviews. And I think publications are going to have to know how to resurface things and get more play out of them. Because, you know, there's still the Fargo review that I wrote is still relevant now to you, or whoever who's never seen it.
Yeah.
And Dan's Fargo wrap up with Noah Hawley is relevant to you, you know, a month or two later when you finally finish it. And publications and online outlets need to be more savvy or learn how to be savvy about knowing that this stuff is evergreen and how do we resurface it rather than just make it searchable content.
Right.
And so I tried to attack that a little bit because, you know, I get paid to watch television. I'm drowning in it and I'm behind as well. And then the more people I talk to, you know, I talked to some friends and they were like, it was so funny because I was, you know, they were like feeling bad that they hadn't finished Veep or Silicon Valley. And then a friend of mine's like, well, I just feel shamed that I actually haven't even started Handmaid's Tale, you know? So it's like, and that's over. And so this is true exponentially. So really, if we talk about how ratings don't matter at the beginning or even nightly or even weekly, neither do the reviews and the postmortems matter as much anymore.
Yeah, it's almost like time is, I don't want to say irrelevant, but it's kind of like that. It's almost mm-hmm. like the time is all mixed up and you can't bank on time. It used to be like a show would be on and everybody would watch it and then we talk about it. And then, you know, you get the finale and everybody watches it and then we talk about it. But now it's like everybody's at a different place. This is how I feel about the Netflix mm-hmm. Style binge drop.
Yes.
It's like, how do we talk about an episode in the middle of the season?
Exactly.
Because some people binge to the end and some people are just watching, you know, have just started watching and watched the first one. Mm-hmm. And so how do you address any of that? And what's the role of criticism? And, you know, you've done different things too, where you will write about finales sometimes and you will review the first few episodes of something sometimes. But I also remember your regular breakdowns of like Mad Men, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which were really fun, but those were in the moment of like, this is what happened this week on Mad Men. And,
right.
And that is a huge amount of work and it's a very limited audience, but it can be really great for somebody who's really tuned into that. I've been doing that with Twin Peaks, where I've been seeking out the sort of Twin Peaks write-ups. And I remember doing that years ago with Alan Sepinwall's stuff, because he was covering a lot of shows I was watching. And mm-hmm. it's kind of fun to get those, but it's also an enormous amount of work for the writer. And you still can't cover anything but a little tiny fraction of it. So I don't know what you do. It would be great if, I don't know how you'd find the time, but it would be certainly great if they could just hand you everything and say, this is the show we're going to make. Why don't you review it as a whole? But unless it's on Netflix, they can't do that because they're still making it. Like, you can't,
right.
When a network show premieres in October, you can't really judge how it's going to be in May. It's impossible because they haven't made those yet.
Right. And endings are really important. My feeling, I've expressed this, is that we don't write enough about the endings. And then this is a shaded answer to that part. I think that critics are so overwhelmed with things that, you know, you're almost expected, which to me makes no more sense anymore. But like, you're expected on the night of the finale. And I remember that, I remember Alan and I, and a couple of other people, we would be writing each other saying like, oh my God, we got to bang out this Mad Men recap and we're going to be up till 3 a.m. doing it. Well, look, the number of people who actually started and finished Mad Men on time these days, or any show that you bring up, it doesn't really matter. And so when people feel like they have an urge to like, okay, Fargo just ended, let's do, I've pre-interviewed Noah Hawley about the finale, and we're going to get up this recap and all this stuff. I just think there's less of an urgency to do that right now because, you know, the audience is so fragmented that the percentages are not, they can't possibly be high anymore. They can't, the number of people who actually saw it all the way through and ready to read that can't be very high.
Yeah, I was wondering. We were talking about Sense8 and giving it an ending and all of that too. Like, is there value in that holistic view of a series, viewing it as a complete work and saying like, when you get around at some point this year, maybe mm-hmm. to, well, let's say you watch season 2 of the rest of season 2 of Sense8 at some point, and then they drop that finale. Like, at that point, it's almost worth doing a review of Sense8 as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And like, how did it, do you want to start on this journey more than it is like, how did the last 2 hours go? But like, now that it's over, what can we say about this as a unit and whether as a piece of art and whether you want to consume it or not? And
absolutely.
Which is really weird, because then you're literally reviewing shows when they're done instead of when they've started. But once that review is out there for everyone who hasn't started yet, they've got that sense of like, you know, do I want to watch Battlestar Galactica? And you say, well,
right?
Because it's like the highs in the middle are really great. But how tied are you into the ending? Because a lot of people didn't like the ending. So,
right.
or Lost, or, you know, there are lots of examples like that. I don't know. There's no good answer here. This is the problem, because it kind of requires a level of vision that's impossible, because the ending doesn't exist when you're writing about the beginning. Some people want to get on the train right away and watch it while it's live. Other people don't, right? I do believe there's a whole strata of TV viewers today who don't want to watch what's new. They want to watch what's done. Mm-hmm. Mad Men is waiting for them. Breaking Bad is waiting for them. And when they start it, they can finish it. They can go all the way through it and be done. I hear that about book series too, where people are like, I hear those Game of Thrones books are good, but I'm not going to read them until they're done, because I would hate to have it just end in the middle. It's like, well, just read other things then, because it's going to be like forever before he finishes those, if he ever does, right? So that becomes a totally different thing, where like, the catalog becomes as relevant as a show from that premieres tomorrow.
Yeah, and exactly. And so, and I think we as an industry are grasping with how to deal with this, because, you know, you just said people are, you know, you would wait to review a show until it ends. That is completely on its head of
it's
how
bananas.
Yeah, it's bananas. It's I love it. It's bananas. Let's do it. But I also feel like part of what, I don't do those deconstructions anymore. I loved when I did it. They were a ton of work.
Yeah.
But I think more people were like on that timeline then. And now all these years later with all these other shows, no one's on that same timeline, or very few people are. It's not worth the effort. But I also think that like what I didn't like about that part was, I think critics get paid essentially to think about things and not rush to judgment. We're actually... it's better to take a pause and think about something and then evaluate it, rather than like do it an hour after it ended. I don't rush something up on the site. I've never understood that, because invariably if I read somebody else's work like that, and I even if I know that they're good writers and solid, insightful critics, what I always see is like, boy, if they had been given a week to do this, it'd be so much better.
Right. Well, it serves a different audience. I mean, I do that with Doctor Who and Game of Thrones. We do a podcast the night it airs and talk about it. And the audience it serves is basically it's somebody who watched the show and really likes it and wants to talk about it, or hear friends talk about it and doesn't have people to talk about it with. Right. Like I would hear from people about Game of Thrones, like that was their Monday morning podcast going into work, was the recap and like discussion of what happened the night before and what we liked and what we didn't like. I think there's value in it, but that is like, I talk about these shows and then I go back and watch them again later, and my opinions like totally change. It is a first cut, and it is like, hey, I just watched a show. Let's run through it. And it's a very different type of thing from, it's not like considered criticism or trying to view things in a larger context. It is snap judgments. And that's a, you know, again, there's a place for that, but I mean, maybe podcast is the answer to something like that.
Think so. We're talking, right? That's what we're trying to talk it out.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of podcast stuff is like first draft of your thoughts. And then if you are also a writer, you kind of move to the next step and then it informs and helps you focus your thoughts. And then you move on to the putting it down on, in words on paper or, you know, on computers and on the web. I struggle with this though, because like my daughter is discovering shows, right? And my wife and I are like curating shows for her to watch at 15. The Office is her favorite show of all time. She loves Parks and Rec. She's been watching that. And just last night we all sat down as a family and watched the first three episodes of Arrested Development. And she was howling with laughter, right?
That is awesome.
It's amazing. There's always money in the banana stand. No touching. So... that's great. And it made me think, like, with these huge catalogs on Netflix and Amazon and places like that, like, I wonder if some portion of your job should be like curated lists of shows in categories that are great and finished, right? Like, like these kinds of comedies and these kinds of, you know, kind of mixed comedy dramas and these serious dramas and these escapist dramas and like update those on a regular basis on the website, which is weird because that's like not what any TV critic kind of learned how to do. But like in some ways, that's like news you can use if you're somebody who's looking for a show to watch.
Yeah.
And it's like, how do you tell your editor, if you're a traditional TV critic, that I'm going to write a story about Arrested Development, which is not on, and although it is coming back,
it's
apparently
coming back, yeah.
But it's like, it's not on. It has not been on for years, but it's like, it's still totally relevant. It's still there on Netflix. You could totally write about it. It's weird, right? This is where we are now.
Yeah, it's weird. And I think there's value in it, though. It's just, it's convincing other people. And, you know, I'm not even sure I made a convincing case in this Critics Notebook, but it's, those were definitely the thoughts in my head. What we've been talking about was sort of distilled down into what I wrote about as I was sitting at home thinking, you know what? I get to watch all these endings and now I want to talk about them. But, you know, it's there were other people who still haven't finished it. And
Right. Yeah,
it's just a weird mixed up world now.
It is. It's a mess. What a mess. That was the longest Columboing ever.
Yeah, it was in history.
But that was good. That was great. Couple quick letters.
Okay.
The MVP. My Vogue on Poetry.
My Vogue on Poetry.
And this is related to what we just said. He's asking, what is on your I want to watch it, but I can't right now lists? I bet there's good fodder for the TV masses. So what's on your list of like, I gotta watch this. I haven't been able to, but I know I need to get to it.
Oh, the two big ones are Handmaid's Tale and Twin Peaks, just because that's to be talked about.
Yep.
Those have to be finished. I think that we've had episodes of this very podcast where we've talked about this really great stuff that's sitting on Netflix that might be from other countries.
Right.
The River or River. Maybe it's
Line of Duty. Line of Duty's on my list because everybody has been recommending that. And it's like, it's on my list. I'm going to get there sometime.
For me,
Fargo, like which we mentioned earlier, it's on my list. And I'm still very early into The Americans and I want to get through that. So those are on my list. Those are high up. And The Leftovers, actually, I want to finish that because I've only seen
Leftovers
the first
amazing.
Like 8 episodes of that. So
Yeah, and it's look, there's a lot of those shows, right? I mean,
so many, and
growing, and it's
Veep, Veep, I'm like 3 seasons behind. Silicon Valley, I'm 2 seasons behind. I mean, there's so much,
right? It's crazy,
outrageous. So there's I mean, that's just so my Vogue on Poetry. That's our just a quick cut, like listen to all of that. So all the shows.
Well, all the shows, basically. It's funny. Just quickly, somebody else. I was in a conversation recently where we were talking. Somebody had mentioned a show, and I said, "Oh, well, like happy. You're talking about Happy Valley." And the other person, I don't even remember what she was talking about, and she thought she didn't hear me, and thought it was a publicist at a cable channel, and we were talking about two separate shows, and the person was looking at us like, "You guys are not even like this thread is not." It's not joining. And then we realized that. So, and it was like, oh, they're very similar. A police person in this. And it's so funny because there's like all those shows are out there and this person hadn't seen either of them. So at the end all of that was like, oh, just Google it. Watch both of them.
Yeah.
So
watch more TV.
All the shows.
Gary in the 510 wrote in about Twin Peaks and said, I was already looking forward to Tim's thoughts on Twin Peaks, which I'm guessing none of us will hear or read from him before, best case scenario, all 18 hours have aired. It may also be the end of the year, Gary.
Yeah.
And then he goes on to talk about Part 8, which I haven't watched, but suffice it to say that he thought it was bizarre and ambitious and astonishing. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to watching that. He says, my question to you, Tim, is do you expect that you will ever write about Twin Peaks, and what conditions have you laid out for yourself before you'd consider undertaking it?
Oh, I'm definitely going to write about Twin Peaks. It's funny because I've noticed that two or three people have tried to contact me either via Twitter, which I expect, and then hilariously, which I don't expect, through email, which seems so dated. In fact, I opened one up the other day, and it was like it was some, I can't remember what the subject line was, but it was something like, ha ha, smarty pants. So super wrong you were about Twin Peaks versus Legion. Well, I can't wait to hear you come clean about how embarrassed you are. And I was like, really? I guess, but am I? You know, I was like, so I will definitely be writing about it. at some point. And the person was like, it's brilliant and everybody thinks so. And I thought, do they really though? I don't know.
I feel, I will say this, and again, this is the comparison with the X-Files, which is, I feel like Twin Peaks so far, again, 8 out of whatever 18 they're in, I feel like so far what we can say is, it has not been received as a complete disaster. Why did they bother?
Right.
It seems to have been received as various gradations from, yep, it's David Lynch doing his thing, to, oh, this is incredible. I think a lot of it has been like my reaction, which is like, I kind of can't stop watching it. Some of it is probably really bad. Some of it's probably really good. I think I can tell the difference, although not always. But, you know, it seems people are still talking about it, and
yeah,
people seem to still be watching it. And I thought there was a really good chance that it would come out and everybody would be like, what are they thinking?
Mm-hmm.
Instantly irrelevant. Why are we bothering even talking about it? And that didn't happen. So no. Good for them.
It didn't happen. I will just say this, and I have no, I mean, again, it's a, TV's a long tail. I think, especially TV like that is, and I sort of disregard it, but I did see, I don't know if it was, TV Mojo talking about, the ratings have been really bad.
Really bad. Yeah. Yeah.
But that could change, you know, cause again, it's a long, I mean, but the early, like rich people who are like watching it, like in its slot or even within 7 days, it's not been good.
And yet I keep seeing people talk about it on the internet, right? So I don't know. Maybe it is that it continues to be that cult show that the people who talk about it are really excited about it and nobody else is paying attention. But,
well, there is obviously there's the Twitter echo chamber.
And, yeah. And then they're going to sit there. And yeah, but somebody, it is an echo chamber, but somebody actually has to make a noise to make an echo, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
It could
so
also
are,
just
yeah,
be
exactly.
The sound of crickets. And
yeah,
it's not that, which I really thought that might be the case. But it's also not it's not a ratings hit or anything, but it might be good. I mean, it might be good for Showtime in the end to have it on streaming and people can dive in whenever they want.
I think it's been very good for Showtime because people are talking about it and they're not really talking about any other of their shows. Stuff maybe
yeah, right.
Billions, but that's it. Yeah. That's it.
Hobo Eric wrote in, I think this is Hobo Eric on the Facebook page. He said, Gary in the 510 said it all about Twin Peaks. So I want to focus on the halfway point of the year. See, on Facebook, you can follow up other people's comments with your own comments. He says, I'm making a prediction now with the Americans coming off a slightly less than amazing season and Fargo not quite up to the levels of the last two. I believe when Tim writes his year-end list of the best 51 shows of 2017, it's good knowledge, solid, will be a new leader. Will it be The Leftovers? Does Twin Peaks have a shot? Handmaid's Tale? Some not even seen gem? What do you think about what's the current state of affairs of your slowly coalescing year's best list?
Well, I just finished a couple of days ago. I just finished Fargo and I thought it was magnificent. And I need to see what some other people think about it because I always think it's magnificent, but I vaguely remember a couple of nebulous tweets saying, oh, whatever, wasn't as good. Or, you know, it tried to be, I think I saw a headline saying it fails because it tries to be all things. I didn't read it, of course, but and I was like, okay, whatever. But then I think Dan mentioned in his piece that he thought Fargo was really great. And I thought Fargo was really great. And I loved the whole part of it. But I also really loved The Leftovers and, you know, again, haven't even got to a couple of the other bigger ones. So, but there could be a change. But Fargo was the one in the last 2 years which had nailed it. So we'll see what happened. And the Americans, and I finished the Americans. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, maybe is he saying, will there be a different? Will this year will it not be the Americans? Or
yeah,
saying this year will Fargo win again?
Picking up on what I picked up on, which is like some extra love for The Leftovers this year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Let's put it this way. The highest vote I could give in my TCA awards this year went to The Leftovers.
Oh, there we go. All right. Well, we'll see. There's a lot of time between now and when you make that list. So
yeah, a lot of times
that stuff kind of percolates. You marinate in it a little bit, and you know, with reflection in December, it's going to be maybe different. You never know.
Exactly. And the TCA category is as it's worded is a little different than say a year-end list.
Following up on Fargo, Art from the 425 said, Fargo season 3 was probably the most existential yet, and while that might not be everybody's cup of tea, it sat fine with me. I found the final episode gripping, especially the final sequence. But here's the problem. There's a major continuity issue in the final episode involving a broken down car that magically comes back to life when required. This is not a trivial issue, as it was absolutely crucial for the plot to move forward. I find it hard to believe the writers missed it, and I'm pretty disappointed they decided to just let it go. Did they get high points for artistic merit, but a few mandatory point deductions for technical performance? Too harsh, Art in the 425.
It's not too hard, harsh, Art. I thought that exact thing. I was really surprised that that was happening. I don't think it was a continuity error. It wasn't mentioned in Dan's recap with Noah Hawley. I don't think it was a continuity issue, but I got to tell you, I was really surprised when that car started up.
It's like a plot, more like a plot hole or a hand wave kind of thing.
Yeah, it was. You get the sense that, like, is it? Did he run out of gas, or did it just like it, the car clunked to the side of the road in the middle of nowhere? So I think it was gas. And did he magically get some gas and take off? Because it was a weirdly transitioned scene, but as soon as he got into the car and it started, I was like, wait a minute. So yeah, I was really bothered by that. So that was, I struggled with that. That's, I'm glad he pointed that out, because yeah. I definitely, that was a demerit in my book, and I was surprised to see it.
So in the follow-up interviews with Noah Hawley, some things we did learn is that he's not saying never to Fargo season 4, but he can't see it happening in the next 2 or 3 years because of film projects he's got going on, and Legion season 2, which he's working on now, and this adaptation of the Kurt Vonnegut novel Cat's Cradle, TV adaptation of that. So, which is a bizarre book, and I can't even imagine what that will be like as a TV series if he goes through with that. But it sounds like he's not closing the door on Fargo, but he only wants to do Fargo if he has a story he wants to tell, and given his other projects, that wouldn't happen for a few years.
Yeah, does it mention, because I saw the THR exit one where
I think that's the one I saw.
Yeah, but I did. Do you know who he signed with Cat's Cradle with? I'm not sure what outlet.
I thought that was an FX.
Because yeah, that could be interesting, because the issues there that I think are going to be like, well, they're very, very first world problems for these creators. But yeah, I think it's going to be an issue for different outlets when their star creator signs a deal and can work elsewhere. And that's,
yeah, Cat's Cradle is an FX project.
Okay, so yeah, so, FX and HBO have been very loose about telling people, you know, HBO, the most famous with Larry David, right? That they said, whenever you have an idea, come back, we'll do the next season. It could be 2 or 3 years. It doesn't really matter. I think that FX knows that Legion is, you know, it's an ongoing series. It's not an anthology, and right. Fargo's an anthology, and you could put it to bed. And also, Fargo got through 3 seasons of, I think they're wildly different, but they end up kind of where they are now. And a little bit of a break wouldn't be a bad idea creatively. I think where you run into some issues, though. So yeah, I think you're right. It could take a while, but I know the one that they were like, they had no control over was that they just launched Atlanta, and it became this like, This little thing you have to really nurture, and it became this hit. And then Donald Glover got the key role in the Star Wars. What are you going to tell him? He can't do it,
right?
but that shifted, you know, that shifted Atlanta season 2 back,
right?
So
well, at least it's FX getting this material
okay,
from him.
Good,
but
good.
But yeah, that's a head scratcher. That Cat's Cradle. Yeah, we'll see how that cradle. Is. That's we'll pretty wild. That's, I just read that book. I'll put a link in the show notes. I read it for the Sophomore Lit podcast, which is on the Incomparable Network.
Oh,
John McCoy. And so we reread it. It's super weird. So I'll just put it that way, and I'll put a link in.
Nice. Obviously, Noah Hawley loves to do really weird things.
Yeah, so it's super weird. Yeah, it's a very bizarre. I mean, even for Vonnegut, it's bizarre. Let's see. We've got time for one more question. Let's go to Vast Wasteland from the 614. This is an Apple follow-up question about how do they build their catalog. Vast Wasteland says, as you mentioned, but they could buy some smaller services like Acorn or Crunchyroll. B, of course, create new shows with unparalleled quality. And then did some math on like the cost of that, and you know, make 6 shows with 13 episodes, and you know how many per episode and all of that. And it's like the back of the envelope calculations. And then C is get some existing shows that maybe haven't ever been streamed due to music rights, and maybe Apple could spend some money to kind of like unravel the music rights and get those, and they've got the music industry deals, and boom, there's your catalog, says Vast Wasteland. I don't know if it's quite as simple as Vast Wasteland is putting here, but I think in general this is true. Like, money opens doors, and Apple will be able to spend some money and build a back catalog plus new stuff. They'll be able to do it. It shouldn't be a problem.
Well, yeah, I mean, I would hate to be the person who unravels all the music rights. That's got to be dropping your head on the desk 10,000 times a day. Sort of a side note to that whole thing, I would say that the Apple getting into the TV business has been one of my favorite little... It was fun to do that first draft podcast with you, and fun to write this story.
And then you wrote that story, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And yep. It still remains the thing that's...
It's a new wrinkle in this whole really weird world of television, right? Like, we thought Netflix and Amazon, that was a big wrinkle, and now here's Apple. It's like a whole other, like, what now?
Yeah, I would just say really quickly and that I talked to two writers, both of them famous, very famous in both TV and the books of writing books.
Famous in the annals of book writing is what you're saying.
They both write books. One just writes fiction and one writes nonfiction. And then they both make television shows. And they were curious and confused about Apple. And I thought, oh, really? I thought you guys would be super ecstatic. And they're like, well, yeah, now we are, that you keep talking about it. but they said they're not thinking that way. And I asked about other people that they know in the business, and they're like, yeah, no one's kind of buzzing about it yet. And I said, well, when your first person gets announced that they're making a show for X amount of money, then the buzz will start. And they both agreed, yes, that will happen. So anyway, yeah. It remains a very much a topic of interest to me and people in the business.
Interesting. Yeah, well, I would imagine when those executives start drawing a paycheck, when their summer vacation in Italy is over or whatever.
No, they don't get one this year. No way. September 1 they start.
Yeah. Then they will then we'll be hearing about it.
Yeah.
All right, well, I think that's it for this week. How about that?
Okay.
Not as tight and bright as we've been the last couple of weeks, but lots of good stuff, I think.
Indeed.
So here's how people can be in touch with us. First off, Tim wants to do a Q&A column, so tweet at Bastard Machine with your questions, and he will answer them. One of the questions could be, why isn't Sensei coming back? And he won't answer that. You can also tweet at TVTM for questions for the podcast. I'm Jay Snell on Twitter. You can ask me questions too, I guess, but you know, I don't work in the TV industry, so you know, talk to Tim. Talk to him. He's in the Hollywood Reporter. Come, for Pete's sake. This is your line straight to words read by famous creators. And email us, podcast.tvtalkmachine.com, or post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/TVTalkMachine. Those are all the ways you can reach us. How about that?
Woohoo!
All right, Tim, you have a good weekend. Happy 4th of July.
Yes. Happy 4th of July, too. We will talk soon.
Yes. Thanks, everybody out there, for listening. Bye, everybody.